Poor old Charlie Brown. He just can't seem to catch a break, can he? His Christmas almost didn't happen. And by that, I mean the Charlie Brown Christmas special that some of you might have watched last evening, which everyone has seen almost once. It's pretty hard to miss it. It's been shown several times a year for the last 54 years. And many of us have come to love it as an enduring and endearing part of the Christmas season. But as I said, it almost didn't happen. You see, Charles M. Schulz's Peanuts comic strip already had been running for 15 years by 1965, and had become a worldwide phenomenon. So producing an animated special based on his character seemed like a no-brainer. It was commissioned by the Coca-Cola Company, written by Schulz himself, and produced on a shoestring budget in only 6 months. But Charles Schulz and the production crew made some kind of odd choices. For one thing, all the characters were voiced by child actors. The soundtrack was scored by a jazz pianist named Vince Guaraldi, so it had kind of a jazz vibe to it that one wouldn't expect in a Christmas cartoon, at least not in 1965. Charles Schulz insisted that there be no laugh track, something unheard of for animated features of the time. And last, but certainly not least, the network freaked out that one of the characters was going to recite from the Bible for a Christmas special, no less. Imagine that. The tone, the pacing, the music, and the relatively crude animation all led the sponsors, the producers, and the network to predict that the project would be a total disaster. So they almost didn't air it. Good grief, Charlie Brown. But despite all their misgivings, A Charlie Brown Christmas did air on December 9th, 1965. To the surprise of the executives, around 50% of televisions in the U.S. tuned in. And it was an instant success, going on to win critical acclaim, an Emmy, and a Peabody Award. The jazz soundtrack sold over 4 million copies in the U.S. alone. Live theatrical versions have been staged hundreds of times. Good grief indeed. But what about the story? Well, as usual, Charlie Brown's having a hard time of it. He confides to his friend Linus that despite the Christmas season, or maybe because of it, he's depressed. He can't seem to figure out the real meaning of Christmas. And all around him are reminders of how commercial Christmas has become. Lucy laments that she always gets a lot of stupid toys or a bicycle or clothes or something like that for Christmas instead of what she really wants, real estate. Charlie's little sister, Sally, enlists him to help write a letter to Santa. But her plea to the big man is to make it easy on himself and just send money, preferably tens and twenties. Even Snoopy is decorating his doghouse in hopes of winning a neighborhood contest for lights and display. So Charlie Brown is depressed. And Lucy, in her role as neighborhood psychiatrist, advises Charlie Brown to get involved in a Christmas project, maybe by directing the Christmas play that the kids are putting on. But when Charlie arrives at the rehearsal, he finds that the play has been modernized with dancing and lively music. And so he decides that what they really need to set the proper mood is a Christmas tree. So Lucy sends him and Linus to get a great big shiny aluminum tree, maybe painted pink. But at the tree lot, Charlie Brown finds a spindly little sapling that, ironically, is the only real tree on the lot. Gee, do they still make wooden Christmas trees, Linus says. And despite their doubts, Charlie Brown is convinced that once decorated, this little tree will be just right. But when they return, Lucy and the others ridicule Charlie Brown's little tree and walk away laughing, which brings us to today's reading. Charlie Brown laments, "I guess I don't know what Christmas is all about." And he cries out, "Isn't there anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?" And Linus tells him, "Sure, Charlie Brown, I can tell you what Christmas is all about." And walks to the center of the stage and begins to recite those wonderful words from the second chapter of Luke that we just heard. You know, I bet I've watched a Charlie Brown Christmas a dozen times over the years. But there's something I never noticed before this year. And the truth is, I wouldn't have noticed it this year either if I hadn't seen a reference to it in a blog post by Pastor Jason Sorosky. Let's see if you noticed it. Of course, we all know Linus. He's that precocious and insightful little kid with one notable quirk. He always carries with him his blue security blanket. Lucy, Snoopy, Sally, and the others all try to get it away from him to no avail. And even though the blanket remains a source of ridicule, for the otherwise secure and thoughtful Linus, he just won't give it up. He once described it as follows: "Only 1 yard of outing flannel stands between me and a nervous breakdown." But as Linus is reciting the words from Luke's gospel, he drops his blanket. And most telling is when he drops his blanket. It's just as he said the words, "And the angel said unto them, fear not." Looking at it now, it's pretty clear what Charles Schulz was saying. In fact, it's so simple, it's brilliant. The birth of Jesus separates us from our fears. The birth of Jesus frees us from the habits that we've been unable or unwilling to break for ourselves. The birth of Jesus allows us to drop the false security that we've been grasping so tightly and learn to trust and cling to Him instead. The birth of Jesus means that we can finally give up our idols. And by idols, I don't mean some golden calf or some scary statue of Baal. I just mean the things that we've been clinging to help us get us through the day. John Calvin once said that the human mind is a permanent factory for idols. And Martin Luther put it this way: "Trust and faith of the heart alone make both God and idol. Whatever your heart clings to and relies on, that is properly your God." Finally, Matthew's gospel says it this way: "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Your treasure, well, that's just whatever is most important in life for you. Whatever gives meaning and hope and order and direction to your life. And it's human nature, after all, to seek meaning and worth for our lives. The only question is, what do we use to give it that meaning and that direction? Maybe it's a literal security blanket like Linus carries. But more likely it's a job or a relationship or the esteem of others or a feeling of power. For some it's a comfortable bank balance or a nice house or a new car. Some idols we cling to with joy and others we disdain but still can't seem to let go of. Some of our idols are benign, others actively destructive. Last Sunday morning, in the shower, I was listening, as I often do, to one of my favorite radio programs on NPR, On Being with Krista Tippett. And her guest that morning was the Reverend Serene Jones. I just love that name, Serene Jones. Anyway, Reverend Jones is a theologian, an author, and the first female president of the Union Theological Seminary in New York City. And she was describing a painful divorce that she had gone through some time before. Listen to what she had to say. Quote, "I was having a hard time forgiving the man I had been married to. And I realized that the hatred and trauma and all of the things that we carry with us, we're not afraid to let go of them because they're so painful. We're actually afraid to let go of them because they've become so comfortable. Our injuries can be like warm blankets that we wrap around ourselves and our grief and our pain and our trauma. And they stop us if we wrap them tightly enough around ourselves from feeling vulnerable to the world, unquote. You see, even though painful, all of those negative feelings had become for her a kind of perverse security blanket. But ultimately, she came to realize that they were holding her back. Reverend Jones continues, quote, "And I came to see that until I was willing to let go of those blankets of grief and fear and rage and anger and shame, that I actually couldn't experience the world. And for me, that letting go is a profound description of what forgiveness is," unquote. "Fear not," the angel had said. And like Linus letting go of his blanket, Reverend Jones letting go of those dark feelings was a way to move forward, to put away fear, to get rid of at least one of the idols holding her back, and to seek true peace and security in the one place it's always been and always will be, with God. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it's easy to give up your idols, your comfortable security blankets. The world we live in can be a really scary place. Whether it's the daily barrage of bad news about mass shootings and wars and earthquakes, storms, wildfires, or whether it's the seemingly unending chaos of our current political environment, you know what I mean, or whether it's maybe some chaos that's closer to home in your personal life. Many of you know that earlier this year I was diagnosed with an aggressive form of prostate cancer. And I went through what seemed to me, at least, like endless biopsies and tests to see if the cancer had spread. And finally, surgery to remove my prostate. Throughout those long weeks of waiting, not knowing whether the cancer had spread, I can tell you that I clung to every bit of hopeful news, every word of encouragement, like a security blanket. But ultimately, what was most comforting to me was the love and support and tender care of my wonderful husband, Blake, and the love and the prayers of my family and friends, including my church family here at MCC Austin. All indications are that the surgery was a success, and I'm now cancer-free. But going through that sort of thing makes you realize what's really important. It's not the things you've accumulated, or how much money you have in the bank, or what kind of car you drive. It's the people around you, the love you share, and the good you can accomplish while you're here on the earth, however long that may be. Does that mean I've given up all my security blankets? Not on your life. But maybe they're a little bit lighter than before. You might have noticed that after reciting those beautiful words from the second chapter of Luke, Linus picks up his security blanket again. Seems a bit anticlimactic, doesn't it? Why would Linus pick up that old blanket after so boldly proclaiming an end to fear? Why does he leave the stage with blanket in hand? Well, the simplest answer I can think of is just this. It's what we all do. It would be unrealistic to believe that it's that easy to get rid of a crutch we've depended upon for so long. It is true that every now and then, we may stand tall in a moment of faith and conviction, a moment when the truth of the gospel hidden in our hearts comes to life. We might fling aside those idols that have been holding us back and experience the true freedom and security that only God can give. But out of habit, at some point, we reach down and pick those things right back up again. Faith is powerful, but it's also fragile. It needs nurturing. If that were true, you wouldn't need the church, would you? You'd come here once, You'd be baptized, you'd go out, and you'd live a blameless and courageous Christian life. But how often does that happen? Instead, maybe we come here on a Sunday morning and we're inspired by the worship, the music, the preaching. Maybe we're fired up to go out and change our lives or to change the world. We're going to end poverty, feed the hungry, house the homeless. We're going to drop all those idols that have been slowing us down. But then we wake up on Monday morning and look in the mirror, only to find that tattered, familiar old blanket still draped over our shoulder. And the truth is, none of us is likely to end poverty or hunger or homelessness, at least not alone. But together, we can feed and shelter a group of homeless guys on some freezing nights here in Austin. Together, we can supply meals for a bunch of disadvantaged kids through our school lunch program. Together, we can give a bit of hope and dignity to some victims of abuse through our Purple Bunny Project at Easter. Together, we can make Christmas a bit brighter for some poor families in our neighborhood. And I don't know if you saw them this morning, but there's a huge pile of presents back there. Together, we can support the work of worthwhile organizations in our community through our MCC Cares grants. Together, we can support the ongoing work of our denomination, fighting hate and discrimination in dozens of countries around the globe. And when we do all that, one day we may look up and find out we don't need that old security blanket quite as much as we did before, because now we've got other things to occupy us, making sure those guys have a hearty meal and a warm bed and a cold night, making sure that there are sandwiches for those school kids, making sure there are canned goods and socks and warm coats in those bins in the back of the church, making sure that those worthwhile programs are fully funded and staffed. But let's get back to the Peanuts gang. Linus has picked up his blanket and walked off stage, and he's still carrying it when he joins his friends outside Charlie Brown's house. Before them is that spindly little sapling. And Linus says, "I never thought it was such a bad little tree. Maybe it just needs a little love." And he wraps his blanket around the base of the little tree's trunk. And the rest of the kids join in, decorating that scrawny little tree until it becomes a thing of beauty. Now, Linus wrapping his blanket around the tree trunk may just seem like a practical step. That little tree needed the support. But here's another important part of the story that you might have missed. While everyone else wanted a fancy aluminum tree, those are cold and hollow and there's no life in them. But Charlie Brown came back with something living, yet small and fragile, too weak to even stand on its own, kind of like a baby. Could it be that that little tree, weak and forlorn and despised, represents the Christ child that comes into our world at Christmas? Meek, helpless, vulnerable. And yet, all appearances aside, represents the power and the grace of God Almighty. That little tree that the children hated at first becomes beautiful when they all come together around it to give of themselves and to embrace the beauty that was already present there. And maybe Linus putting his blanket at the base of the tree is a symbol of laying his fears at the feet of Jesus. And this time, he doesn't pick it up. As the show ends, the Peanuts gang are singing. And not just singing, but singing in worship. Even the musical style at this point is different from what we've heard previously. The obvious song for them to sing would be "O Christmas Tree," because that's been playing gently in the background. But the focus is no longer on the tree. The focus has become bigger than the tree. The focus is Jesus. And the children slide effortlessly into "Hark the Herald Angels Sing, Glory to the Newborn King." Linus and his friends have moved from speaking truth and hearing truth into a place of worship where they can finally respond to that truth. Sort of like the shepherds instructed to fear not so very long ago. And that's the true meaning of Christmas, Charlie Brown. Amen.